This morning, we're kind of going to be talking a little bit how to place our hope in Jesus. This two-week series we're starting today is called Wave Walker and Foot Washer. All right, so Jesus was a wave walker, and he was also a foot washer. But as we're going to see from today and next week as we look at these stories, not only was Jesus a wave walker and a foot washer, we are called to be wave walkers and foot washers. There's amazing things that will happen through our lives when we allow Jesus to work through us. So today, if you're taking notes, the title of today's message is Navigating the Waves of Life. Navigating the Waves of Life. Growing up, my dad had a boat, and so we would regularly go on to Joe Pool Lake in Grand Prairie, Texas. It was just a few miles from my house. And we'd get on the boat, and the boat rarely worked. So this was not like a nice boat. My dad, anytime he hears me preach and I tell the stories and how the boat never worked, he always likes to remind me that it didn't work like 1 out of 8 or 10 times. But the way I remember it, it was like it worked once out of 8 or 10 times. Not that it didn't work once out of 8 or 10, it only worked. It was like we'd go to the lake, we'd back the boat down the trailer, we'd sit in the boat, and then we'd fire it up, you know, we'd drive the trailer over and park it, and then all of a sudden the boat wouldn't go anywhere. So we'd go get the truck, your trailer, and back it back down and load it up, and we'd just go home. It was like, yeah, what a great fishing trip. So I loved fishing growing up. No, I actually didn't like fishing too much when I was young. I thought it was boring, and then I got old, and I'm like, this is awesome. I love it. And I don't even care if I catch anything now. Just being out there alone, not talking, in the nature, it's great. When you're 8 years old and hyperactive, being alone, out in nature, not talking, not great. Not fun. But I remember this one time we are out fishing in the boat, and we're way, like, nowhere near the boat ramp. Like, nowhere near the boat ramp. We had traveled all the way, felt like miles when you're a kid, you know. Felt like we've been in this boat for hours before we stopped, but it wasn't that long as an adult, you know, you realize that. But we were way out, and we were fishing by the bridge. And the way it works is, like, when you go fishing and you're not having a good day, you keep trying to push, like, how long can you stay out there, because you think this next cast is going to be the one. Like, and if you just catch one fish, that next cast, like, okay, we're good, we can go back. So we're pushing the limits, and we knew it was going to rain, but we felt like we were going to be okay, and my dad had checked the weather. I mean, there were no apps back then, you know, so we had checked the weather before we went there on the news, and he kind of felt like he knew when it was going to start raining. And then all of a sudden, the sky just got completely black, and we knew, okay, the rain is coming. But we're still fishing because we haven't caught anything. So it's like, all right, well, it's not raining yet. We probably still got some time. I don't know why my dad felt we still had some time. But all of a sudden, it starts raining. And so he's like, okay, we got to pack it up and we got to go. So we pack it all up and we get in the boat and he starts taking off in the boat. And out of, like, nowhere, it's no longer just raining. I mean, it is like torrential downpour, kind of like we've had the past few days around here. I mean, just dumping on us. And so then, as we're going and the rain is coming down, we're not going too fast, because if you go too fast in the boat, when the rain starts coming, it like hurts. It pelts your face. We're just getting wet. We're just kind of motoring along. And then all of a sudden, I don't know if we even have these here, but like in Texas, you have these giant tornado sirens. And like when there's a tornado watch or warning, like those sirens go off and you can just hear it no matter where you are. So we're going and the sirens start going off. So then my dad's like, okay, we really need to get home. Like, this was probably not smart. So he guns the engine. And we're like, whoo, and the rain's coming down. And we're just getting like, poof, 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 you know, like smacked in the face. And then we're in the middle of the lake. And the waves are going. And the boat's like, vroom, vroom, vroom. And then you're just getting pounded in the face. And your butt's hurting. And I'm like, Dad, slow down. And he's like, Nathan, we can't slow down. We have got to get through this as fast as possible. And I'm like, that moment is like, instant panic, like fear. We're going to die, or tornado's going to sweep us up and kill us. And we're going to, you know, it's like, this is it. My life is over. I'm 10. It was a good 10 years. Now it's over. It's gone. But I look at my dad and I'm like, Dad, are we going to be okay? And he looks at me and he says, Son, we've been through this before. We're going to be okay. And just seeing like his calm demeanor, maybe he was panicking inside. I don't know. But his calm demeanor and just his resolve, like no fear on his face, I thought, whew, okay, we're going to be all right. and we make it back. We, you know, get the boat as quick as possible. We get home. We're drenched. There was no tornado. It was just a watch. Because, you know, back in the day, like, we didn't have, like, the polygon. Like, when I was growing up, there was no polygon. It was like, a tornado's coming. Everyone within an 1,800-mile radius, just get in your bathroom, put a mattress over your head, put on a helmet, and just pray you don't die, right? That's like, and now there's like, oh, it's a polygon. It's like a 3-mile, and they can track it all. You know, kids, you have no idea the kind of fear we grew up in. Like, we had, it's like, it starts raining. It's like, is there a tornado? You know, it's like, everyone's going to die. But I remember seeing my dad in just that calm sense of, we're going to be okay. We're going to make it through. Now, I begin to think about, like, this story we're going to look at and how the wind and the waves are rocking a boat. And then Jesus steps onto the scene. When Jesus shows up, there's a sense of wonder and awe that we're going to see here. But also, when Jesus is in the boat with us, there's this peace that we can have no matter what is happening. And as I was reading the story, I was thinking about, as a child, seeing the at least outward peace my dad was showing and thinking, well, if he's not worried, I'm not going to be worried. And when I look out at what's happening, you know, in the world as of yesterday, and I think, if Jesus isn't worried, then I don't need to be worried. He's going to be with me. And we're going to see today that when the wind and waves of life are hitting us, Jesus is ready to walk on those very same waves. The waves don't faze Jesus at all. So if you have your Bibles, Matthew chapter 14 is where we're going to be. We're going to start in verse 22. So right before this story, Jesus has just fed 5,000 people. There was a couple small loaves and a couple fishes. And the disciples got together and Jesus broke the bread, and then 5,000 people were fed by this very small amount. He made the food multiply. So this story is like directly after that. So the disciples have just seen like one of the like premier miracles. All right. Verse 22. Immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. After sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there alone. Verse 24. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. So we have Jesus who's gone up in the hills to pray by himself. And then we're going to see Jesus looks out and he sees the disciples struggling in the boat. He sees the wind, he sees the waves, he sees the disciples, and he sees that they're struggling. It's a pretty dangerous situation for them, okay? Then, if this was us and we were on the shore and we saw a boat in trouble out in the waves, what would we do? We would have to get like a bigger, better boat to get out there and rescue the people who were in trouble. But Jesus, he doesn't look out and see them struggling and think, I need to get a bigger boat, because Jesus knows something different than we do. He knows that he can do things that defy the very laws of nature. See, Jesus isn't limited by the same things that limit us. God is not limited by the laws of nature. A while back, I showed my kids one of my favorite movies growing up, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. You guys remember that movie? Right? Well, if you haven't seen it, the premise of the movie is like there's this dad scientist that invents a shrink ray, and his kids actually accidentally get shrunk down to the size of like a little insect, and then they get lost in the forest of their front yard, right? But since everything is huge, like they're in this massive adventure, like going out, and like they're seeing the world from a different perspective. There's these massive ants and bugs that are now dangerous that once weren't dangerous at all. But I think a lot of times, when we think about God, this is what we try to do with God. We try to look at God, and we can't really comprehend how big, how massive, how awesome he is. So we try to shrink him down into something that we understand. We try to take all the attributes of God that we see in Scripture, the things we don't quite understand, maybe we'll throw them out, or we'll try to figure, it's like, we're just going to shrink God down into this little bite-sized thing that's like, well, I can understand that, so that's who God is, and therefore I'm limiting the power that God possesses when I do that, the power he can work in my life and around me. But God, he refuses to be defined. He refuses to fit into this little box. See, even a lot of times what we do in religious environments is we saw God work a certain way. It's like, oh, God did this when I did this. And then we will create formulas. We'll create religious systems around some way that God worked in the past. And really what we're doing is we're placing him in a box. We're saying, if I do this mathematical formula of prayer this way or this, then God's going to show up in this way. And God just refuses to operate that way. God just refuses to say, you know what? He just says, I'm not going to operate in the way that you think. I'm just going to do what I want to do because he's God and he can do that. So in the story, Jesus sees the disciples. The wind and waves are pounding. In verse 25, look at this. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them, walking on the water. Now, we're going to focus on this whole walking on the water piece, but can we just stop and say, like, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. So as we go forward, and the disciples and how they interact with Jesus and what happens to Peter, just remember, this is 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, I don't know about you, but my brain doesn't even function at 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm not awake. No one else should be awake, especially not my kids who think it's summer and they can just stay up all night long. Like, no, go to bed. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them walking on the water. See, God does some things that just don't make sense. Like, walking on the water doesn't make sense. Verse 26. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost!" Now, they had just been with Jesus. They had just seen him feed 5,000 people. But I love how Scripture, right, how Matthew writes here the real stuff. He doesn't write that the disciples were like, well, they remembered it was Jesus who fed the 5,000. They looked out and thought, that must have been Jesus, because that would have been a lie. But they write the truth. They're like, they look out and they see someone walking. They're like, it's a ghost. And they're terrified. Right? But Jesus spoke to them at once. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage. I am here." "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage. I am here." Then Peter calls to him. Look at this. "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water." Now, it's one level of authority and power to walk on the water. It's a whole nother level of authority and power to transfer that onto someone else and have them walk on the water. And so Peter's like, in this moment, he recognizes, okay, if that's truly Jesus, and we're not being deceived, if that's Jesus, then he can call me out onto the water and I'll be able to walk as well. Just Peter saying that was a massive, like, not only step of faith, but it was an understanding of the power of Jesus. It's like, if it's you, then call me out and tell me to come to you. And then verse 29, these two words are so powerful. Jesus says, "Yes, come." Whatever you're facing today, Jesus says, "Yes, whatever you've done in your past, Jesus says, "Yes, come to me." Whatever's been done to you, whatever hurt you have, when you say, "I can't go and I don't know if my life's going to, I don't, does Jesus want," Jesus says, "Yes, it's me, come." If you're carrying hurt or pain or loneliness or despair or addiction, Jesus says, "Yes, it's me, come." So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water toward Jesus. Now, let's just pause. Most of us, we've heard this story before. Maybe if you haven't heard this story before, great. This you're going to see something that a lot of us, we miss. Peter just did something that no one else on the face of the planet over the history of the world besides Jesus, who is God himself, has ever done. He walks on the water. Now, those of us that know the rest of the story, Peter gets a bad rap because we're about to see, like, he gets scared and he about drowns. But he walked on the water. Think about, like, this has got to be on Peter's, like, top 10 list of things that ever happened to him. Right? When I think about my life, it's like, oh, what are the best things that's ever happened, Nathan? Like, oh, I remember when Brooke said yes to marry me. Like, greatest moment of my life. Right? I remember when our kids were born. Amazing. I still remember, like it was yesterday, the first home run I hit over the fence when I was 10 years old playing for the Astros. I hate the Astros, but that's the team I was on at the time. And I'll never forget those moments. Peter's top 10 list. Like, Peter, what's the greatest thing that ever happened? He's like, dude, I walked on freaking water. Like, he walked on water. But so many times, because we know the rest of this story, we just pass right by that Peter does something that none of us have ever done. He walks on water. See, what happens is Peter steps out in faith, and he's rewarded for his faith. Every time we step out in faith, every time Jesus says, go and do this, and we say, I'm scared and I don't know if I can, but we go and step out anyways, we're rewarded for that step of faith. Every single time. So in verse 30, though, here we go. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. So he's out there, like, standing on the water, and he looks around and he sees the storm. He sees the waves crashing. He sees the wind, and he becomes scared, becomes terrified, and begins to sink. Save me, Lord, he shouted. Verse 31, Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. I'm so glad that Matthew included this all-important word immediately here. He doesn't just say, and Jesus saves him. He says, immediately. Peter takes this step of faith. His step of faith is rewarded. He's walking on the water. But then he looks around and he sees the wind. He sees the storms. He sees the turmoil. He sees all the other all the reasons why he shouldn't be walking on the water. And he gets scared and says, save me. And immediately Jesus reaches out and saves him. When I feel like I'm drowning, when I feel like I am pressed on all sides, when I feel like the storms of life are coming at me and this is happening and that's happening and all the stress and all the work, whatever, and when it's all weighing me down, this is the verse that brings me comfort. And as I look around and I should be strong in my faith and think, okay, Jesus was with me in the past. He's going to be with me in the again. But I look around and I begin to be scared and terrified by my surroundings. This verse, if I say, Jesus, I need you, immediately, he's there. He doesn't ridicule Peter. He doesn't call him names. He's not like, okay, Peter, like, while you're drowning, like, while Peter's drowning, he's not like, hey, what are you doing, bud? Like, you're on the water. Look around, you dummy. Like, you're okay. No, Jesus immediately saves him. It's only after Jesus saves him that he begins to teach him. It's after he saves him that he teaches him. He doesn't ridicule. Now, we can read this next line and think that Jesus is belittling Peter, but what he's doing is he is instructing him. He says, you have so little faith, Jesus said. Why did you doubt me? When they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped. Then the disciples worshiped him. You really are the Son of God, they exclaimed. Why did you doubt me? We can read this from afar and think, yeah, Peter, like, why did you doubt Jesus? You were walking on the water. But how often do we doubt God, even though we've seen him show up in the past? So we're going to look at three things kind of from this story today on how do we navigate the waves of life. We're going to learn a little bit from Jesus's words, a little bit from Peter's actions, and see what how we do this, how we go about life knowing we're going to face storms, but navigating them. Number one, the first thing, if you're taking notes, is that we need to understand we will all face storms. We will all face storms. My old pastor, J.R. Paul Hemus, he used to always say, if you're not coming out of a storm, or if you're not in the middle of a storm now, get yourself ready, you're about to go into one. It's like, that's just life. We all face storms. The storms of life are real, and they can't be avoided. See, Jesus actually promised his disciples two things in John 16:33. You can read here. He says, I've told you these things so that you may have peace in me. In this world, here's what he promises, two things. You will have trouble. There will be storms. You will have trouble. Life will not be perfect. But take heart, I have overcome the world. He says we can have peace in Jesus and we're going to face trouble. See, there's this myth or there's this perception that's been like perpetuated a lot in American Christianity, Western Christianity, that if we just follow Jesus, life is going to be great and perfect after that. That's all you got to do is place your faith in Jesus, and then everything's perfect, everything's wonderful, you're going to be healthy, you're going to be wealthy, and everything's just going to be great. And what's happened is we've had a lot of churches and like ministry systems that are built on that idea. And then what happens is if someone, things are not going well in their life, they're getting sick, they're losing money, their jobs, then there's this like, well, you just don't have enough faith. If you had enough faith, everything would be going perfect for you. Your life would just be great. And so what happens to that person, they're either wrought with shame that they don't have enough faith in God, or they just say, this whole system is bogus. Like, this whole Jesus and faith system is bogus. When the reality is, Jesus says, look, we're all going to face storms. Every single one of us are going to have difficulty in life. It doesn't matter if you've been following Jesus for a week or 57 years. There's still going to be storms of life that come. You know, I'm not old in the eyes of a lot. I'm old in the eyes of my children. But I'm getting older, right? And there are things as you get older that you just can't avoid. Like as you get older, you're just not as fast as you used to be, right? So playing basketball, I played a lot of basketball growing up. I had an advantage over everyone else. Like I was taller than everyone that I played with. Just kidding. Obvious, that's not true. But I was really fast. Like I was super quick. I was just really quick. I was really fast. Like that was my special skill, my purple cow, right? That's what made me good at basketball is like, yes, I'm short and I could shoot okay, but I was just super fast. So I remember in my early 30s, I joined a men's basketball league and it was super fun. You know, and like I was playing basketball against a bunch of old guys. And so like I was still the fastest person. Like the first three or four games we played, I was the fastest person on the court every single game, even in my early 30s. And so you begin to think like, yeah, of course, like I still got it. Like, you know, I still got it. Like, it doesn't matter that like I'm 33 and didn't work out a whole lot, you know, or whatever at the time. But like, I still got it. It was like the fourth or fifth game we played against a team that was all high school boys. Like they were all like 10th and 11th graders. And we were like, we were undefeated at that time. Like we'd won every game. And these high school punks, you know, come up and we're like, we're going to take care of these guys. Like they're not even that tall. You know, like we're going to be fine. This is going to be easy peasy. And then we get out there. And about the first 30 seconds of the game, I realized, of course, I was faster than all the guys that were 10 years older than me. But I am slower than every one of these high schoolers. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to figure out how to play. So I just quit playing basketball because I was no longer faster than everybody. Like, we know that even as we get older, there's things we can't outrun. Like, they're guaranteed that we're going to slow down the older we get. It's guaranteed we're going to face storms. Like, it's guaranteed we're going to face storms. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 25. It says, when the storms of life come, not if, but when the storms of life come, look at this, the wicked are whirled away, but the godly have a lasting foundation. Man, if that doesn't bring encouragement to you this morning in light of what is happening, right? When the storms of life come, the wicked are whirled away, but the godly have a lasting foundation. But that word when is an important distinction. You know, I have a son who's about to turn 16, and for a while, he'd been saying, like, when I get a car. And I'm like, you mean if you get a car? It's like, no, when I get a car. It's like, no, if you get a car. When I get a car. No, listen. If I allow you to drive one of my cars, it's not when. It's not guaranteed, right? It's not a guarantee that you're going to get a car when you turn 16 unless you have money and pay for it. And guess what? He does not have money to pay for it, right? It's not a guarantee, but here's the thing is he's going to get one because I want him to drive himself to his golf in places so I don't have to anymore. But he still needs to understand it's not a right. It's not a guarantee. It's a privilege. It may or may not happen. Most likely will. But at the same time, if like one of the cars breaks and he doesn't have one anymore, he doesn't have one. But storms in life are an absolute guarantee. It's not if. It is when the storms of life come. But when they come, we know that we have a lasting foundation. So number one, we have to recognize that we will all face storms. And so many times in life, facing a storm doesn't mean that there's something bad or wrong happening in your life or that you did. It's not necessarily the cause. Now, sometimes, yeah, sure, storms of life are caused by our own sin and our own depravity. But sometimes it's just life. It just happens. We're going to face storms. So there's no amount of like good deeds, good works, no amount of prayer, no amount of reading scripture that you can do to avoid all storms. But all those things, the reading, praying, staying connected to Jesus are what prepare us to have the lasting foundation we need to sustain through those storms. Number two, not only will we all face storms, but we will choose to respond in fear or faith. We will choose to respond to those storms with fear or with faith. Whenever the disciples saw Jesus walking on the water, Peter responds with great faith. He says, if it's you, tell me to come out to you. Tell me to come walk on the water. Jesus says, come. the next 30 seconds when Peter says, Jesus, if it's you, tell me to get out here. And Jesus is like, yeah, come on, Peter, get out here. The next 30 seconds when he takes his foot and he steps over the side of the boat and puts that into the water, that was some crazy faith. He wasn't responding out of fear. He was responding out of faith. Whatever we choose, fear or faith, there will be people on either side that think that we're foolish. If we respond in faith, there's going to be people saying, don't do that. Don't get out of the boat. What are you, stupid? You're going to drown. It's storming. Like, don't do that. Anytime we respond in faith, when God says, hey, take 2 weeks off and go on a mission trip, you know? And he's like, I'm going to step out in faith that when I get back, my job is going to be secure. Or even if my job is not secure, God's going to take care of me. There's going to be people like, don't do that. We're in the middle of a big project right now. You can't go and you can't do, like, don't waste your vacation, whatever it is. If you choose fear or you choose faith, people on either side are going to look at you and think that we're foolish. But there has to be a point in time in our lives where we decide, do we want to look foolish in the world's eyes or do we want to look foolish in God's eyes? For Father's Day, my wife got me a t-shirt and it says, life is full of choices. And then it's a whole different set of golf clubs is on the shirt. Because really, that's the most important choice in life. Which golf club are you going to use? No. But I think it's a funny shirt. I love it. But it kind of highlights like, yeah, life is full of choices, but there are high stress choices and there are low stress choices, right? Like which golf club to use when you're 175 yards out and there's wind in your face. Like that's a low stress choice. It's like, okay, you hit a bad shot, good shot, like whatever. Like I'm not even playing in a tournament. I'm just playing to have fun. Like it's a very low stress choice. But life is full of lots of high stress choices as well. Choices that will determine the course of our life. Whether we go one way or the other, whether major things happen, when those choices, when those high-stress choices come, when those high-stress environments come, the question is, are we going to choose fear or are we going to choose faith? But what I love about this story, all right, with Peter, is Peter chooses faith. He steps out onto the water, which also leads us to number three, all right? We will fail, yet our failure is not final. Because Peter chooses faith. He steps out on the water, and then once he gets out there, he chooses fear. He's like, the wind, the waves, I'm going to sink. I'm going to die. Are we going to choose fear? Are we going to choose faith? Or maybe a little bit of both? But here's the thing. Here's the great thing about our God is that we will fail, yet our failure is not final because Jesus is right there to rescue us when we make the wrong choice. As soon as we make the wrong choice, we say, Jesus, I need you. It's that turning towards Jesus that engages him and he says, I'm here. Let's navigate through this together. Your failure is not fatal and your failure is not final. Let's think about what Jesus didn't do to Peter. Jesus doesn't hold Peter's head under the water like an older brother. If you had an older brother, you know what I'm talking about. You know those moments when your older brother is just bigger, stronger, and just holds your head under the water a little bit longer than he should? You know, not long enough that you're going to die, but long enough that you think you're going to die. Like, Jesus doesn't do this. He's not like, ha-ha, sucker, you sunk. Jesus doesn't belittle him. He doesn't call him names. He rescues him first, then he teaches him. See, we're going to make mistakes. You will fail in life. And Jesus will always be the first one to offer you help. See, God not only forgives us of every failure in our life when we ask him to, but he uses those failures to help us get better. He uses those failures to teach us. He uses those failures. When we turn to him, when we ask for forgiveness, he not only forgives us, he says, now we can take this pain, we can take this hurt, we can take this mistake, we can take this, and we can turn it into a lesson for the future. That's going to fuel you for future purpose. Peter cries out, Jesus grabs him out of the water, and the two of them walk back to the boat together. Jesus says, Peter, come here with me. And guess what? We're going to walk on the water together. I think we forget that sometimes. Peter's out on the water walking. Then he sinks. And that's a lot of us. That's where the story's over. Like, you failed. You sunk. But no, Jesus rescues him. And then he walks on the water again back to the boat. Like they're walking on water again. But Jesus is like, hey, you did it on your own. You got scared. Now I'm going to do it with you. We will fail, but our failure is not final. We too often choose fear because we just think it's safer in the boat. We think it's safer in the boat. And so much of our cultural so much of what we, the choices we make in our culture, in our cultural, like, our cultural, whatever, I can't think of the words, we'll just skip over it. So the way our culture works is so much is like we try to set ourselves up so we don't have to be in dangerous situations. Like we pad the bank account and we pad this and we get the safest this so that there's no danger. Like so much of what we do is try to avoid all danger, but we're going to face danger no matter what. Did you know just in the past year, 500,000 people got hurt falling out of the bed in the middle of the night? You are never safe, even when you're sleeping. Now, I don't know the severity of those injuries. Some of them might have been a stubbed toe. Some of them might have been a broken hip, like back. Who knows? A broken ankle. I don't. But 500,000 people. Did you think about that? Let that comfort you as you go to sleep tonight. We aren't really safe. The idea that we're going to avoid all danger is just a. It's a delusion, really. So, if life isn't safe and we're not guaranteed safety, why play it safe? If Jesus says, I want you to do something, it's going to take a little bit of faith and maybe take a little bit of danger. Why not just do it? Because if Jesus said to do it, then he's going to be there. He's going to be with you. Worship team, why don't you go ahead and come on up? We're going to wrap this up. Not like in the next 2 minutes. Don't get excited. It's 11:02 and Gabriel went to like 11:30 last week. So we got 28 minutes. All right. And I got a page and a half. We'll see if we can get 28 minutes out of them. Yeah, just kidding. The question is, are we going to allow our failures to define us, or are we going to allow God to use them to fuel us for greater things? We're all going to face storms. At times, we're going to choose faith. And let's be honest, at times we're going to choose fear. We're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to fail. But that failure isn't final because Jesus is involved. Look at what Jesus tells Peter. Luke 22, verse 32. This is right before Peter is going to betray Jesus three times. So we talked about, all right, what's top 10 things in Peter's life? Probably in that top 10 list, I would think like top five at least is walking on water. If we say top two, top three failures in Peter's life, it's right after this verse. Peter's about to deny that he knew Jesus. He's going to deny him three times because he's terrified. If he's lumped in with Jesus, that he'll also be killed by the religious leaders. But look at what Jesus speaks to Peter before this even happens. Jesus says, but I've prayed for you. I have prayed that your faith will hold firm and that you will recover from your failure and become a source of strength for your brothers here. Jesus knows that Peter's going to deny him. He told him. He says, you're going to deny me three times before the rooster even crows. But I've prayed for you that even through that failure, your faith will hold firm, that you're going to recover. I'm praying that you recover from that failure. And then after you recover, as a part of that recovering and in the future after that failure, is you're going to become a source of strength for your brothers. He's saying, I'm praying that the failure you're about to endure fuels you for purpose later on. If you're taking notes, there's a last thing to write in there. And this is like bottom line. If you only get one thing out of today, this is what I would want you to get. Jesus is a wave walker, and he's inviting me to trust him. Jesus is a wave walker, and he's inviting me, he's inviting you to trust him. I don't know what storm you're facing in your life right now. It might be financial, it might be job related, it might be relational, it might be emotional, it might be spiritual. I don't know what storm you're facing, I don't know what storm you're about to walk into, but I know that Jesus is greater than any storm, and he's inviting you to trust him. He's inviting you out onto the water where he will walk with you through that storm. So the question for us is, are we going to trust our own ability? Are we going to trust in our own power, our own intellect, or are we going to trust in Jesus? 2 Corinthians chapter 4, This is Paul writing. And he's writing about going through trouble, going through storms. So if you're going through a storm today, I want you to write down this verse, because I think this verse can be just a reminder and a strength and a comfort through you, to you, no matter how far through the storm or how long the storm is going to be. You know, storms come and they go, and they have different severity levels. They have different lengths of time. Sometimes storms last 5 minutes, 20 minutes. Sometimes they last days. Sometimes the storms of life can even last years. But look at what Paul writes here. He says, "We are pressed on every side by troubles, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. We are hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are not destroyed." Maybe you're feeling pressed on every side by trouble right now. Just because you're pressed on every side doesn't mean that you're crushed. Maybe you're perplexed or confused. Don't let that confusion drive you to despair. Maybe you're being hunted down or feel that you're being hunted down by others, by humans, but know that you'll never be abandoned by God. Maybe you've gotten knocked down. Maybe the storms of life have knocked you down, and you're sitting on your butt, looking at your wounds, and thinking, man, this is way more difficult than I thought it was going to be. Maybe you've been knocked down. You can know you haven't been destroyed. Jesus is with you through every storm, if you put your faith in him. See, Jesus promised to be with his people. God promised to be with his children. And we get to rest on those promises if we're in his family. If you're in his family, all you need to do is trust Jesus. He's inviting you to trust him through the storms of life. If you have not chosen to place faith in Jesus and follow him, Jesus is inviting you to trust him. He's inviting you to place your faith in him. And then once you place your faith in him, once you choose to follow Jesus, that's when you're guaranteed that he'll be with you through every aspect of life. In every storm, he will be with you. These promises here, we're pressed on every side, but we're not crushed. They're for the people of God. So if you are a child of God, mean that you follow God, you follow Jesus, you'll be pressed but not crushed, confused and perplexed but not in despair, never abandoned by God, and never destroyed. Jesus is inviting you to trust him this morning. Would you stand with me this morning? I'm going to invite the prayer team up this morning, and they're going to line the front here. And if you're going through a storm right now, Jesus is inviting you to trust him. And a big part of trusting Jesus is talking to him about what's going on. And that's why our prayer team is here. They're here to pray with you, to comfort you, to help get wisdom, but also pray you through this storm. So maybe this morning you want to make a decision to follow Jesus, and you haven't done that before. Or maybe you've done it before, but you're not following him now and you need to follow Jesus. Our prayer team is here to pray with you. Maybe you're going through a storm. Maybe you know a storm is on the horizon and you're about to go through it and you just need strength. That's why they're here to pray for you. So I'm going to pray, then I'm going to invite you up to receive prayer if you're in any of those groups, and then we're going to worship, and then after that, we'll be dismissed. Heavenly Father, we thank you that we can rely on you, that you never forsake us, you never abandon us, you are always with us, even through the storms of life. You are there. God, I pray that we would accept your invitation to trust you. And this morning, we would not choose fear, but we would choose faith. And those of us who've made mistakes and we've chosen fear and we've done things that we knew weren't right and we played it safe when we shouldn't have, we've stayed in the boat, or even those of us, God, that we've flat out made the wrong decisions and we sinned and we went the opposite way. We thank you that our failure is not final, that you are always there ready to receive us again when we make a mistake. So this morning, we thank you for your word. God, we thank you that you are always with us And that you've left us these stories so that we know the truth, that you will never fail us. In Jesus' name, amen.